The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I'm Seth Leibson, in today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Special Counsel Robert Hur, the man behind the investigation into President Biden's handling of classified documents, appears before the House Judiciary Committee.
Congressman, what I understood is the regulations that govern my conduct as special counsel.
We'll get analysis from Richard Epstein.
What it is just an effort to bully this guy, and Schiff has always been a bully.
With Trump's New York trial coming quickly, we'll hear from Andrew McCarthy on Alvin Bragg's rank political prosecution.
To be fair to Trump, he's approaching this as political combat, not legal combat. I think he thinks the legal result is kind of baked in the cake.
It's a dangerous show trial. McCarthy's prediction?
He gets convicted. If you get him on one, you get him on all 34.
We've got all this and more. I'm Seth Leibson, coming to you from Phoenix, 960 The Patriot, where I host a program in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. Learn more and listen to my program at 960thepatriot.com. And take a moment to follow me on X, at Seth Leibson. That's Seth, L-E-I-B-S-O-H-N. And follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. Town Hall Review is part of the Salem Podcast Network. We're going to start in D.C., and a hearing earlier this week before the House Judiciary Committee. On February 5th, many of you will remember, Special Counsel Robert Hur released his report on his investigation into President Biden's handling of classified documents, where he found our sitting president to be, and I quote, a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory. The president's defenders were not pleased. California Congressman Adam Schiff pressed Special Counsel Hur at the hearing.
But you chose a general pejorative reference to the president. You understood when you made that decision, didn't you, Mr. Hur, that you would ignite a political firestorm with that language, didn't you?
Congressman, politics played no part whatsoever in my investigative steps.
But you understood nevertheless, didn't you, Mr. Hur? Mr. Hur, you cannot tell me you're so naive as to think your words would not have created a political firestorm. You understood that, didn't you, when you wrote those words, when you decided to include those words, when you decided to go beyond specific references to documents? You understood how they would be manipulated by my colleagues here on the GOP side of the aisle and by President Trump. You understood that, did you not?
Congressman, what I understood is the regulations that govern my conduct as special counsel.
And those regulations,
me to write a confidential report for the Attorney General.
Which you knew would not be confidential.
Explaining my decision, and that is what I did, Congressman.
Mr.
I followed the rules.
You knew it would not be confidential.
I followed them. Yes, Congressman, what you are suggesting is that I shape, sanitize, omit portions of my reasoning and explanation to the Attorney General for political reasons.
No, I suggest that you not shape your report for political reasons, which is what you did.
That did not happen, Congressman. That did not happen.
Richard Epstein of the University of Chicago Law School was a guest of Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer in Chicago.
Your assessment of Robert Hur's reasoning, and if you want to get into his testimony to support that reasoning, please do.
Yeah, look, the first thing I want to say is when you listen to Schiff and Cori Bush and everybody else, nobody asked the question of whether it was true or false. All they wanted to know was whether or not this thing has some political implications, and everybody knows that it does. He gave something to everybody in that sense, but I think the most important thing that came out is that Hur was an honest public servant being derided for doing what he was supposed to do. I mean, anybody who watches Joe Biden dotter across the stage and understand that he could barely talk even if he had the teleprompter in front of him, and knows that he's about my age, but he's a hell of a lot more exhausted than I am. And never in my wildest dream would I want to assume a political position that requires you to work 24/7 with the entire fate of the nation resting upon your shoulders. And so what it is just an effort to bully this guy. And Schiff has always been a bully. Everything he's ever said has been wrong with respect to these various explanations. And remember, he was the man, as you pointed out, who made all of these really stirring claims about deep revelations of the corruption in the Trump administration, was never able to back any of them up. And in fact, what happened is, I always ask the following question, the bigger mouth, Joe Biden or Donald Trump? Well, it's going to be Donald Trump by a mile. Who's made more illicit indictments and who's been the victim of more of these things? Well, the Democrats have constantly gone on this warfare. And as best I can tell, Trump has never indicted anybody based upon the kind of political statements that come out of his mouth. And so it's really a very, very odd situation that you hear on the Democratic side and from the American Bar Association, which has become a completely useless organization, that we really are worried about threats to democracy. But they always assume it's the venting of Donald Trump, and they never assume that it's the rather insidious indictment and prosecutions of Joe Biden. And so there's a real disconnect there. If I could give Donald Trump one piece of advice, it would be shut up and people gratuitously. But, I mean, let's put it, those are not capital offenses. On the other hand, bringing false prosecutions against him, as they've done in case after case, against Trump is really, I think, a political scandal. And to sort of have the mantle of being only the defender of the rule of law and the sanctity of democracy is a kind of gross hypocrisy, which is done. I mean, Cori Bush is mindless in everything she says and she believes. Everybody's a white supremacist because the white supremacist is defined as somebody who disagrees with her. And that would certainly put me in that category, and I dare say would put both you and Amy in that category.
Yes, absolutely.
So what happens is it's the debasing of language in political debate, which is most disturbing on both sides. And it's once you put that in there, people who are not experts in policy find it very hard to get through the policy issues that are behind the debates to figure out who's right and wrong, so that the public discourse suffers by all of these kind of rambunctious outbursts on both sides of the political aisle. We are in a state of polarization worse than I've ever seen. I blame Trump for much of the silliness and the rhetoric, but in terms of the conduct, nobody beats the Democrats for playing the game of warfare, as we now, lawfare, L-A-W-F-A-R-E, which has become a popular term to explaining how it is that legal doctrines and legal prosecutions have been harnessed for political reasons.
The lawfare that Richard Epstein is talking about has me concerned. We've never seen such a rank political prosecution waged against a leading presidential candidate like we've seen against former President Trump in recent months. The case to watch now is that of the New York DA, Alvin Bragg. Hugh Hewitt turned to a former federal prosecutor in New York, Andrew McCarthy.
I believe Trump's going to be convicted. I think they're going to stack the jury. I think he's going to be convicted. I think they're going to have a sentencing trial. I think it's going to be a show trial right out of Beria. Show me the man and I'll find you the crime times. That Beria was Stalin's chief of secret police. And he said famously, show me the man and I'll find the crime. This appalls me and it ought to appall any American who believes in the rule of law. A jillion years ago, I would take the West Side Rapid from 110th and Broadway down to Foley Square. And the federal courthouse was down there. I have no idea where this is going to be tried in New York. Andy, you're a New Yorker. Where is this going to actually be tried?
It's the state criminal court. I don't think it's the big Supreme Court building next to Foley Square U. I think it's the criminal court on Center Street, if I remember right.
All right. And I do not believe it's going to be televised. Am I correct?
So far, that is correct. The last I saw, and that was a report in the BBC about 10 days ago, where Merchon hasn't allowed any of the proceedings up to now to be televised. You know, I don't think much of Merchon, but I think to his credit, first of all, I'm not in favor of televised trials to begin with, but I think he is worried about getting a jury. And that does make it more difficult.
Now you brought me to what I want to get to, jury selection. If this gets underway on the 25th and is not stopped by an interlocutory appeal of something or other, the jury pool will come in there. Manhattan voted about 80-20 for Trump over Hillary and Biden over Trump, for Hillary over Trump and for Biden over Trump. What are the chances that a Trump voter makes it through to the jury?
You know, it's a 12-person jury. So, you know, 20% of 12.
Well, don't they use their voir dire to kind of figure out, let's get rid of the people who are wearing MAGA hats?
Well, they try to, but the thing is that, you know, the defense gets more ticks than the government does.
All right. So
the chance of them getting a favorable juror. It's not, you know, I don't want to, I guess I'm pushing back you because I tried a lot of cases in New York and I found the juries were very fair. Now, I agree that that's a million years ago, but and New York has changed. But I'm also a New York conservative, so they are out there.
And now we do have to have the former president at the table. I believe I've heard you say that as a condition of his bail, he's going to have to be there every day, which is in the middle of the election. I can't believe we're doing this, but he's going to be there every day. What's your advice to the president about demeanor throughout the trial?
I mean, it's hard to advise President Trump because he thinks he knows better. And, you know, there's a trail of lawyers who've tried to give him advice that it's in his interest to sort of rein his routine in. I think, however, that to be fair to Trump, he's approaching this, as he did with the E. Jean Carroll case, as political combat, not legal combat. I think he thinks the legal result, like you do, and I think like I do, is kind of baked in the cake. He's very, very likely to be convicted here of at least something. And as we've described the stacking of counts, the logic of the case is if you convict him on one, you probably convict him on all 34. So I think he's going to fight this as part of the campaign and is not going to be terribly interested in some young lawyer telling him, you know, look, if you don't run your routine in here, the jury's going to hate you and we're going to get convicted.
Should he, if you were advising him, should he use the opportunity that will daily present itself outside of the courtroom to speak to the American people about election interference? I mean, if I were him, I would get one message and I would repeat it 34 times. This was a show trial. This was a sham. This ought not to happen in America. I'm the nominee of the major political party. And this is a Democratic elector you ran on running this show trial. And don't be deceived. What do you think?
Yeah, I would do that with this client uniquely, because as far as like getting him to stop speaking, that ship has sailed. He's made so many statements about all this that they have plenty if they want to try to use it against him. And in the meantime, I think at this point, especially given what happened with the state trials and the E. Jean Carroll trial, Trump's got a very good message that this is New York against Donald Trump. And one of the things I would point out to you is that you and I are from the federal system where people are appointed and at least nominally they get vetted by the Senate to make sure they're not going to abuse your authority. In New York, for the most part, even the judges are elected. Now, Merchan happens to have been appointed, but they have a mixed bag of appointed and elected judges. And obviously this district attorney, much like the state attorney general, Letitia James, he ran bragging, pardon the pun, that he had sued Trump more than any other New York state lawyer in his prior life as a lawyer for the AG's office.
Will Trump be able to introduce the fact that Cyrus Vance passed on this case, the predecessor to Alvin Bragg?
Yeah, I would say good luck trying to stop Trump from getting in front of the jury anything he wants to get in front of the jury. The judge may try to suppress that, but if Trump testifies, I imagine that's going to come out.
I don't think he's going to testify to you.
Well, it would be a bad look if he's going to do a press conference in front of the courtroom twice a day and then not make the 12-foot walk to the witness stand and testify.
Coming up, McCarthy's prediction.
He gets convicted. If you get him on one, you get him on all 34.
When the Town Hall Review returns in a moment, stay with us.
This is Dennis Prager, and now a truly exciting new benefit. My monthly online video get-together for PragerTopia Plus members only. For an hour each month, get an exclusive chance to ask me anything. I'll be answering your questions. I've never done this. Submit your questions for me at PragerTopia.com. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to PragerTopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Seth Leibson. We're going to continue with more of Hugh Hewitt's conversation with Andrew McCarthy today, talking about the upcoming trial against Donald Trump in New York. The merits of this phase of lawfare waged against Trump are pretty easy to sum up. They stink. This is count stacking, and it's an abuse of the criminal process. It has never been an acceptable practice in American jurisprudence. I guess it's deemed acceptable today because they really, really hate Trump. That does not make it any less dangerous for this election cycle and for the standard and precedents it sets. Let's pick up on Hugh's conversation with Andrew McCarthy.
Andrew, hold forth on why it is so bad to do what Bragg is doing vis-a-vis reaching out for a crime that is not a crime, not in his jurisdiction, to take the payments made by Michael Cohen and turn them into 34 felonies against Donald Trump in Manhattan.
Well, first of all, as John Yoo has pointed out, it's a constitutional problem because the president and the executive branch of the federal government are charged by law to enforce the campaign finance laws, which are federal. So to the extent Bragg, a state prosecutor, purports to do that, he's actually invading what is the proper legal realm of presidential decision making. There's two different federal bureaucracies that enforce these laws, the FEC and the Justice Department. Both of them looked at this and decided not to enforce against Trump. Even if the campaign finance laws applied, Trump as a candidate is subject to different limitations than, say, Michael Cohen, who was a supporter. So there's even less of a basis to try to bring an action against Trump. But I think the two things I would point out are just like more of a real life thing, Hugh, than a necessarily a legal principle. One is, imagine if Trump used campaign money to pay a hush money agreement with a porn star, how, you know, the Alvin Braggs of the world would have, you know, just exploded in wrath over that. And I think that just underscores that this is not a campaign debt or expense. If you have something that would be a debt, irrespective of whether there was a campaign, that's simply not a campaign expense.
Correct.
Here, this was a payment of a debt that existed irrespective of the campaign. But the other thing that hits me like a thud, you, is that Bragg's theory is that Trump stole the election. It was a very tight election with Hillary. And by concealing these payments, if voters had known about these payments, what Bragg's theory is that Hillary would have won the election. And even if you indulge the fiction that this was a campaign expense that had to be booked and had to be disclosed, the next disclosure period after Cohen paid this money would have been in the first quarter of 2017. That is to say, even if this was under the campaign finance laws, it wouldn't have been disclosed by law prior to the election. So the whole theory is wrong.
People need to hang on to that. The theory is wrong, and somehow Judge Merchan said go forward with it. I am hoping the immunity motion last minute filed before now on the 25th knocks this back a few months, because this is a show trial of the sort we ought not to have in the United States of the nominee of the leading Republican of the leading opposition party to the party in power. And it's just appalling. I don't think enough people actually spend enough time talking about the specifics of the particular cases. So I really wanted to drill down on the Manhattan one. What do you see happening in terms of what will it's not going to be Bragg. I'm not sure who the career prosecutor is going to be that's going to lead the case. What will they lay out first? What witnesses will they introduce, do you expect? And how best to discredit those witnesses when they come forward?
Well, as far as the witnesses are concerned, I think they'll have a gold mine, the Trump defense will, of impeachment material. There's very heavy reliance here on Michael Cohen, and he has been not only convicted of various fraud cases, but when he first fed this story to the federal prosecutors, who, by the way, rejected doing a criminal case on Trump before Cy Vance did. So it was the state rejecting it only after the feds had rejected a case on Trump. He was trying to sell himself as a cooperator to the Southern District. They didn't take him because he had too much baggage. He ended up doing a three-year sentence. I don't know how much of it he actually ended up doing. But since he's been out, all he said is that he was double-crossed by the Southern District. So now he even claims that he didn't commit the crimes that he pled guilty to. So I think they're going to have a lot of fun cross-examining Cohen. And a big part of the reason, again, that Cy Vance turned this case away and the Southern District did is because you have to rely on Cohen to make it. Stormy Daniels' testimony will be necessary, and it's not as important, but it'll, as far as atmospherics is concerned, it would probably draw the most attention. But again, I don't think it's as important to the scheme that's charged as Cohen's testimony.
And when Ms. Daniels is on the stand, do you want to ascertain whether she signed NDAs for any other people?
I don't know that I go there unless I was sure it helped me. But I would draw out from her the fact that, you know, she didn't just refuse to talk about this affair with Trump. She actually affirmatively denied that it happened. Now, the way that you have to worry with her that you could get clobbered, because she has since gone with a story that she was extorted, that somebody, you know, basically came up to her and told her to shut up about Trump when she was in the presence of, I think, her young daughter, if I'm remembering the story right. So I don't think there's corroboration for that, but she does say it happened. So if you go there, that's going to be the comeback. But she has publicly asserted that she never had any romantic involvement with Trump.
So we have two problematic key witnesses. Are there any other, Andy? We got 5 minutes left, so I want to make sure we get your estimate of whether or not he'll be convicted and where most of the defense team have got to put their pressure.
Yeah, I think the extortion that's going on now is the speculation about whether Alan Weisselberg, the CFO at the Trump Organization, will testify. He's just been convicted. He's prosecuted a second time in 18 months by Bragg on perjury charges. And I think that was really just a shot across the bow to people who might otherwise testify favorably to Trump, to signal to them what they'd be in for if they tried to do that.
So your prediction?
He gets convicted.
They have 34 counts?
Most of the counts, if not all. Well, I just think the logic of the case, to the extent there has logic to it, is that if you get him on one, you get him on all 34, because what he's done is he's taken one thing and turned it into 34 things.
So now I go into the realm of the political. I've written this, and I believe it. I think this is going to help Trump, because it is so baldly a political prosecution. What do you think, Andy?
I agree, and the reason that I think the biggest reason for that is the thing we haven't talked much about, you, and that is Alvin Bragg. There's serious crime being committed in New York, including in Manhattan, and his default approach as like the paragon progressive prosecutor is either not to prosecute it or to plead it down from felonies to misdemeanors. Here, he's taken nonsense that I think shouldn't even have been charged as a misdemeanor and turned it into 34 felonies. And the only difference in the two situations is this is his political nemesis as opposed to his job.
It's a real test of the rule of law. I hope people understand the stakes here. Now, I think the obstruction case is Trump's serious problem, and we're not going to get there before the election. But this is a political prosecution. I think Jack Smith in D.C. is as well. The one in Atlanta has fallen apart. But this one really should offend any American who believes in the rule of law.
For the complete conversation with Andrew McCarthy, go to HughHewitt.com. Coming up, we'll turn to China.
China knew by November of 2019 not only that there was a virus, but the virus was transmittable from person to person.
When the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. In just 10 minutes, I can zip through 10 stories that help me start my day and help shape where I go with the Mike Gallagher Show. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to DaybreakInsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's DaybreakInsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's DaybreakInsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. With Trump forced to show up in court in New York for his trial date, the nation and the national news media will be consumed with that story. It's a shame. We ought to be focused on the very serious national security issues facing the nation. At the top of the list is President, or I should say Chairman, Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party. We're going to turn now to Peter Schweitzer. He's the author most recently of Blood Money: Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans. He was a guest of Dennis Prager.
Why would they remain silent?
So I think more broadly, there are a lot of people that get into politics to go along to get along. They like the perks. They don't want the heavy lift. If you accept the reality of what China is doing, that they are responsible for the deaths of millions of Americans in a variety of ways, you cannot have a normal relationship with this foreign government. that requires some very hard choices, and some people in Washington don't want to make hard choices.
You said they're responsible for millions of Americans' deaths. Is that, did I hear you correctly?
Correct. So you obviously have COVID, as I point out in the book. This is not just the million deaths that we know about. China actually engaged in a series of actions that maximized the body count. So it was much higher than it needed to be. But this also includes fentanyl poisonings. I think the biggest misnomer about the fentanyl crisis in America, that this is largely run by the Mexican drug cartels. As I lay out in the book, they are actually the junior partners. This is a Chinese operation through and through, everything from the precursors to the 2,000 Chinese nationals in Mexico who create the fentanyl out of the precursors to the laundering of the cartel money. This also includes violence in our streets. Since 2018, Beijing has been smuggling devices, according to our Department of Homeland Security. I got access to internal reports, has been smuggling into the United States these small devices called auto-sear switches or Glock switches, which are highly illegal. You attach them to a Glock handgun, and they convert that handgun to a fully automatic machine gun. And the Chinese have been smuggling these in, specifically marketing them to criminal gangs and drug dealers operating in the United States. So when you look at the accumulation of actions they have engaged in, you are looking at millions of deaths over the last half decade.
With regard to COVID, do you believe it was an accident at the lab in Wuhan or deliberate?
I'm willing to concede that it was an accident, although it could have been deliberate. But what I lay out in the book, again, based on documents leaked to me from Homeland Security and elsewhere, China knew by November of 2019 not only that there was a virus, but the virus was transmittable from person to person. They knew that. But they lied to us until the end of January, almost 3 months, saying there's no evidence it transfers from person to person. What did they do during that 3 months? As I lay out in the book, they basically cornered the market on PPE supplies. I don't mean the cloth masks people are wearing. I'm talking about the K95 masks that medical personnel used. They literally stopped their exports, and they then massively imported them from around the planet. So when they finally disclosed to us 3 months later, there were no masks to be had, and they knew the whole time. And this was part of an explicit strategy to maximize the effect it was going to have in the United States and to try to manipulate us to adopting kind of the Chinese model of disease control or perceived disease control.
You mean lockdowns?
Yes, lockdowns. The position of NIH and CDC up until the lockdowns was the way you deal with a pandemic, the sick stay home, everybody else goes about their normal lives. China was intimately involved in jigging the system. There was a famous report out of Imperial College of London in March of 2020 that said if we did not engage in Chinese-like lockdowns, there would be 2 million deaths by the end of the year in the United States and 500,000 in the UK. Of course, that was wildly wrong. But as I point out, that report in and of itself was put together with Chinese medical personnel, faulty Chinese data. Imperial College of London is actually a close partner to the Chinese government. It is their premier academic partner in the Western world. And this was part of the strategy, and it worked. And this led, of course, states like California, New York, and New Jersey to implement lockdowns. And the Chinese government even donated to those states drones to monitor their own populations using Chinese drones. And they were actually flying these in California with loudspeakers, telling people to return to their homes. It's kind of an Orwellian image. But this was part of their strategy and I think a big political victory for them, because their claim, of course, was that they knew how to deal with the virus and the chaotic United States did not.
Coming up.
It's a calculus that our administrations continue to make. You know, they can trust China as its core based on its word. You can't.
More on the threat from China when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
John Solomon provides exclusive reporting and newsmaker interviews on John Solomon Reports on the Salem Podcast Network.
We broke this story because we got the documents early. They put out this new information, and it affirms our reporting that this Democrat donor gave about $5 million or more in assistance to Hunter Biden, basically paid off his bills.
Subscribe to John Solomon Reports today on Apple, Spotify, Google, Rumble, or at SalemPodcastNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Seth Leibson, coming to you from AM 960 The Patriot in Phoenix. Looking back on China and all that we've learned from the COVID-19 pandemic, the nature and character of the Chinese communist regime should be overwhelmingly clear for all who have eyes to see. Chairman Xi Jinping is a hardened communist who cannot be trusted. Let's pick up with more of Dennis Prager's interview with Peter Schweitzer, author of Blood Money, Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans.
So what leads me to believe that it was an accident, as I said from the beginning, I assumed it was the lab and not wild animals.
Yeah, look, it very well could have been intentional. I think it's pretty clear now that the animal claim just carries no merit.
Correct. Okay, yeah. So all I wanted to say was, what leads me to believe that it was an accident, which doesn't in any way exonerate the Chinese government, is that they impose the same and even worse draconian lockdowns on their own population.
Yes. I think that the indications that China decided opportunistically to maximize the potential of the virus to their benefit. In fact, I found a senior CCP official who described the virus as an opportunity for unrestricted warfare against the West. And Unrestricted Warfare is a famous book published in 1999 by two Chinese military officers, both of which now have senior positions in China, who said that you should be willing to use anything as a weapon against the United States. The flip side of this story, though, is and this is based on the emails from Tony Fauci and his colleagues, is that the obsession of Tony Fauci was to cover up not only the issue of the lab leak, but to cover up China's complicit behavior in maximizing the body count in the United States. They were always excused as errors or mistakes, but the errors and mistakes that Beijing made always end up costing human lives. So you remember, for example, the discussions about respirators. China said you need to put people on these ventilators in order to live, and there was a panic. Turns out they were disastrous. The death toll of people that were put on these respirators was 99.7%. It was horrible. Well, China is the one that pushed that. And
what,
the
is it, what,
that
what does it mean by pushed it? Guide me through that.
They shared with their U.S. colleagues, the Chinese CDC shared with colleagues in the West that you need to use respirators. They will save lives. And we took that unfiltered. And the problem is you could look at one of these and say, okay, well, they just made a miscalculation. But it was miscalculation after miscalculation that always ended up costing human lives in the West. And it fits, I think, this broader effort that they had, including the cornering the market on PPE supplies for our medical personnel that was designed to maximize the body count. It was this unrestricted warfare, as this CCP official described it.
Is it also possible that they had a domestic agenda in that they were able to expand the police state during COVID?
Absolutely. I think that was part of the agenda. I think the thing that people need to understand is who exactly President Xi is. We can't, of course, look into his mind and heart and know, but we can look at what he values, what he thinks it deserves praise. And I would just give you two examples of the things that should be disturbing about the man that we're dealing with, and I think confirms what you're saying. The first one involves his father. President Xi reveres his father. He built a large mausoleum in his honor. One of his father's most famous acts, again, President Xi reveres this, was that as a young boy at age 14, he tried to poison and kill his teacher because the teacher was not sufficiently revolutionary. So President Xi admired that, the notion that a disease or illness could be used for political gain certainly would conform to that. The second thing to know, I think, is that President Xi's wife, they've been together for a long time. She's a famous singer. She was actually the singer who, after the troops massacred students at Tiananmen Square in 1989, she actually serenaded the troops with martial songs. So this is a very, very hardened man who has a very strong and harsh agenda, and the use of power against the innocent, against whoever, is not particularly strained. So the notion that he would use an illness for political gain and advantage is, I think, very consistent with what we know about what he cherishes and values.
Given your research, I'm curious what you think. Why did Britain hand Hong Kong over to China?
It's a great question, especially when it was the Thatcher government.
Yes, exactly.
That the rails in notion. I think they saw inevitably the shift in economic power occurring, and that China would either work to subvert it, which of course they ultimately did, and that they were hoping to get the best deal possible. That's, I think, probably what the calculus was. And it's a calculus that our administrations continue to make. You know, they can trust China as its core based on its word. You can't. They respect power. They trust power.
They're communists. I don't understand what more needs to be said.
Yes. And they respect power, and they use the leverage that they have over people, commercial ties that they've developed with people. I mean, one of the things, Dennis, that I point out in the book is, you know, Joe Biden has said nothing about China's involvement in the fentanyl trade. And I lay out in the book.
That's fascinating. Wow.
He said nothing about it. And when he brings it up with Xi, he said there's no finger pointing. Well, here's what I believe is at play there. The Sinaloa cartel in Mexico, they're the kings of fentanyl that are responsible for most of it, this poison in the United States. A Chinese gang called UBG set them up in the fentanyl trade, and that gang is headed by Zhang Anlo, who goes by the name White Wolf. In 2017, White Wolf's business partner gave the Bidens a $5 million interest-free forgivable loan that the Bidens have never repaid. So the question is, Dennis, does Joe Biden really want to talk and point fingers at China that is now responsible for the leading cause of death for people under the age of 45 in the United States? No, I don't think he does. You can look at similar relationships that Governor Gavin Newsom has had with figures directly linked to Chinese organized crime, going back to Mayor of San Francisco. So they use that leverage and the weakness of our leaders to their advantage, and it's to our detriment.
Coming up,
that is what they're counting on, and I would say they're having a lot of success right now.
A couple more minutes on the China threat in the final segment of Town Hall Review. Stay tuned.
Charlie Kirk here. It is critical we keep AM radio in all cars and all trucks. More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for news, weather, and opinions. AM is also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping you advised of threatening weather conditions and amber alerts. Text AM to number 52886. Tell Congress that we need AM radio in our cars. Again, text AM to the number 52886. Standard message and data rates may apply.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. Our nation has been slow to wake up to the reality of the China threat and the increasingly clear objectives of the CCP. If there's blindness on both sides of the political aisle, that blindness is not equally distributed. As we look at this current presidential election cycle, President Biden is not only reticent to face current realities, he's naive or compromised, or both. Let's catch a few more minutes of Dennis Prager with Peter Schweitzer, author of Blood Money.
When I was in China a number of times and I saw the giant mural of Mao at the Great Hall of the People and in other places, and I thought, what would the West think if in the Bundestag, the German parliament, there was a giant picture of Hitler, or if they had a giant picture of Stalin all over Russia?
Yeah, it's remarkable, and it just shows how manipulative the Chinese government it is, because if you criticize the Chinese government, they accuse you of being anti-Chinese, even though the greatest killer of Chinese people in human history was Mao. And what you've seen under President Xi is a movement back towards Mao. They never really left Mao, but when you had Deng Xiaoping and some of the other leaders, Hu Jintao, they de-emphasized Mao. What Xi is doing is elevating himself to the same status. So you have Maoist thought. You are now supposed to have Xi Jinping thought. And the same sort of cult of personality that Mao pushed, President Xi is pushing. The old strategist Sun Tzu said, the best strategist is the one who beats his opponent without actually fighting him. And that is what they're counting on. And I would say they're having a lot of success right now.
Talk to me about their buying up of American land.
Take, for example, the situation in the state of Maine. The biggest landowners in the state of Maine are from Canada. The problem is that Chinese nationals create LLCs in Canada, and then it's listed as Canadian rather than Chinese. And one of the things that they're doing, this sort of drug war against the United States, they call it cognitive warfare, also includes a growing, highly potent illegal marijuana around the country. In the state of Maine alone, there are 300 known growth facilities that are run by Chinese nationals. Many of them, by the way, are illegally in the country. These are financed by China, and the marijuana they're growing is much more potent than the stuff that's available legally in California. This is highly potent stuff that is often laced with fentanyl. They have it in Maine, in Oklahoma, in California, Washington State. It is a massive, massive effort. So that's part of what's happening with the land purchases. It's not just wanting to spy on a military base. They have created this national infrastructure to produce this highly potent marijuana. They view it, they describe it as cognitive warfare against the United States, along with TikTok and many of the other things they're doing. They really do believe that this is a way to weaken and undermine American society and culture.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review. There's more of this very important interview with Peter Schweizer. Get it at our site, townhallreview.com. If you enjoyed the program and podcast, do us the favor of sharing it with a friend. Let me point out, you can get Dennis's podcast and Hugh's podcast and this program, Town Hall Review, all at SalemPodcastNetwork.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin and producers David Pouchon, Alex Perez, David Dahl, and Jeremy Siegel. I'm Seth Leibson. Great to be with you.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.